Good morning,
ma'am.
Honorable Deputy Minister, officials from the Department of Foreign Affairs. I'm sure this morning you don't want to be in my shoes. So, I don't know whether we still remember each other. I'm Priscilla Chamber from Pumalang. I'm standing in actually for Mr. The Honorable Sibiya, who's the acting chairperson of this committee, and he's gone to Limpopo to go and chair the committee. Other members will introduce themselves.
I'm Wesley Douglas, representing the Western Cape. Apologies for being late.
Good morning, everybody. Ministers, honourable members, deputy ministers, department chair, everybody. My name is Lalin Tembe. I represent the Northern Cape. Thank you. Morning. It's always very nice to see our deputy minister here, and really would be very honoured for that. My name is Sherry Chen. I'm presenting for Heart Care. Thanks.
Chair, my name is Nkungu. I'm representing for this.
Well, good morning, colleagues, and it's very nice to be here. We don't often have the opportunity to brief the Select Committee, or even for that matter to appear in the NCOP, which I've done a few times in answering questions, so it's a great privilege to be here. We are presenting our strategic plan, which, as you know, is a three-year plan, 2008 to 2011. And we have brought with us a bevy of Department of Foreign Affairs officials, whom I will introduce to you. First, Mr. Mkholisi Nkosi, who needs no introduction. He is wearing three hats today. Mr. Nkosi is our Deputy Director General for Africa Bilateral. He also, in the absence of somebody from Africa Multilateral, wears that hat. So he's Mr. Africa, really, in the department. But today, because our Director General is abroad, which is, of course, the nature of our work, he is also Acting Director General. So he's a very important person, and you must please look after him very, very well. May I also introduce you to Mr. African Moodley, who is our Chief Financial Officer. He's also Deputy Director General level. And also Martin Nompozolo, who is our Chief Director for Human Resources. We thought this was, there are others here too from the department, from DG's office and so on. And so I wanted us all to be introduced. They will be going through the plan, the strategic plan, to give colleagues an insight into what we're looking like into the future for the next 3 years, and they are really the experts. I have asked also the Honourable Chairperson, if I could be released because there is a portfolio committee at 11 in another building which I must run to in about a half an hour. So I thought it is best I will leave this esteemed gathering of foreign affairs officials with you, but I thought it would be really nice if I could just come and introduce them to you, and that's why I'm here today. So thank you very much, and with the permission of the chair, perhaps I could hand over to our acting director general to do the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and warm greetings to the members of the committee. Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister, colleagues. It's my pleasure today, on behalf of the Department of Foreign Affairs, behalf of the Director General to present to you the strategic plan of the Department of Foreign Affairs for the period 2008 to 2011. We prepared for you a set of slides which I'll attempt to present to you in the given time. We've got 59 slides. I will not speak to all of them in detail, but I'll just highlight the key elements of our strategic plan so that at least we can devote much of our time to engaging the issues contained in the strategic plan itself. We've speculated the narrative of the strategic plan. I think we have. And I'm sure you've had the opportunity to look at the document. So I'll just highlight, as I say, some of the key elements of the strategic plan. Well,
let me just say we have received the documents here. I see members are raising their. We didn't actually have time, of which we like receiving the documents before the meeting so that we can, at our spare time, look at the meeting and then documents, and then when we come to the meeting, we are able to engage. But I don't know what happened. I don't know whether it's the department or it's a corner who didn't distribute the documents to the members. Did you receive the documents? Or this moment. So I don't know what
well,
just
as soon as my sincere apologies on behalf of the department, if you receive the document on this moment, I was under the impression that the document was well in advance. I can tell you for this. So I will establish where the program while providing the investigation. Well, Chairperson, with your permission, I will proceed to present the Department of Foreign Affairs and Strategic Plan. Okay. Well, as you know, the strategic plan covers the period 2008 to 2011. This is the medium-term expenditure framework period, which kicked off 2 months ago, and it will take us until March 2011. Our work will continue to be guided by the decision priorities and policy guidelines emanating from the cabinet level, as well as the state of the nation. You know that the cabinet report elaborated a number of priorities at its meeting in January this year. And these priorities were further reflected in the present state of the nation address. While these priorities may be priorities that were determined for 2008, most of them, however, will continue to inform our work over the next 3 years. Hence, we regard the cabinet Lekgotla as instructive in informing our strategic plan for the next year. We've indeed benefited immensely from the political guidance given by our political participants, in particular the minister, as well as the two deputy ministers. We've made an invaluable, very immense contribution to the development of this document. Madam Chairperson, you know that the strategic trust of the Department of Foreign Affairs is anchored on the building and development of relations with Africa. It's aimed at ensuring a better South Africa, a better Africa in a better world. This is the vision of the Department of Foreign Affairs. And in order to do that, we've identified five key strategic priorities which inform our work. And these are the consolidation of the African agenda, the strengthening of South-South relations, the strengthening of North-South dialogue and cooperation, participation in the global system of governance, the strengthening of bilateral, political, economic, technical, and social relations. And indeed, we, in order to achieve these priorities, we are supported by an organization that has been aligned in order to fulfill these objectives. And indeed, some of my colleagues who are here will elaborate later on. We think that we have repositioned and realigned the organization in such a way that it will be in a position to fulfill the executive mandate arising out of the five priorities that have outcome. Now, I would like to deal to elaborate a bit on these specific priorities. Firstly, the consolidation of the African agenda. Our work will continue to focus on the strengthening of the AU as the only and the primary organ charged with the promotion of the unity and cohesion, as well as the integration of the African continent. Indeed, we'll also continue our work around the implementation of the Partnership for African Development. We'll continue with our work on the strengthening of SADC. I'll talk about SADC later on, particularly in view of the fact that this year we'll be hosting the SADC Summit in 2 months' time in Johannesburg. We'll continue our work around the contributing to post-conflict reconstruction and development, contributing to security and stability on the African continent. Indeed, we'll continue our work to strengthen bilateral relations. We are aware that as we speak, we're hosting President Umaru Musa Yar'Adua of Nigeria, which is indeed a strategic partner for South Africa. And this visit is located within the framework of the consolidation of the African agenda, more specifically, the strengthening of bilateral cooperation with African countries. Indeed, we'll also continue to support the work around the hosting of the 2010 World Cup. You know that the 2010 LOC has elaborated a mega program that is aimed at ensuring that the 2010 World Cup is also benefit African countries and that its legacy is felt in most, if not all, of African countries. Because indeed we have positioned and characterized this World Cup as Africa's big history. It's the first time that an African country holds such an important global center, which is going to capture the imagination of billions of people around the world for an extended period of a month. So it has a huge significance. Madam Chair, you are aware that there are ongoing discussions around the political integration of the African continent. And indeed, we've taken the view of South Africa that the integration of the continent is going to be based on strong regional economic community. Your RFP. Critical that we need to have the building block for the integration of the African continent. And indeed, we are working towards that. The harmonization of the existing and indeed the rationalization. We just hosted the session of the Pan-African Parliament, which was a platform to engage on a wide range of discussions on contemporary issues on the continent, including but not limited to issues of the promotion of security and development. Indeed, we're continuing our work around the operationalization of the outstanding institutions, the financial institutions, the African court. We're continuing our work around engaging the diaspora. You know that later this year we'll be hosting the Summit of the Diaspora, which will be a signal event, historic event, first time that Africa has hosted the government to their Caribbean and Latin American counterparts to discuss the role that the diaspora can play in the advancement. Engagement on the 7th, followed by an official meeting on the 8th, the ministerial on the 9th, and the summit on the 10th and 11th. At the end of the meeting, we hope to adopt a declaration that will guide our work with a view to ensuring that we place the diaspora at the center of efforts to achieve the renaissance, the reawakening of the African continent, that wherever the diaspora is, they should not forget the challenges that Africa faces, and they should use whatever access to resources in order to advance the goal of the consolidation of the African agenda. Indeed, we'll also continue doing the work on the strengthening of relations with the EU. You know that we had a successful summit in Lisbon with the EU, where we discussed a wide range of issues and we developed a common program of engagement. So we'll continue to continue our work. We're continuing our work on the with regards to NEPAD. You know that we had a successful summit. NEPAD, head of state and government review summit in Accra, which was hosted by President Wan, and which took stock of the progress with respect to the implementation of NEPAD. We continue our work around the African Renaissance Fund, which is an instrument of foreign policy. We're using this fund to support peace and development on the African continent. Indeed, we continue to also mobilize the additional resources for the cause of the continent. As I said, this year we'll be hosting the SADC Summit. This will be a very critical summit. We think that the two major highlights of the summit are going to be the launch of the SADC Free Trade Area Agreement, which will act as a catalyst for free trade in the also we hope to welcome the Republic of Seychelles to SADC this year. As you know, they've reapplied to join SADC. Madam Chairperson, we are aware that there are ongoing discussions around the issue of the EPAS, the Economic Partnership Agreement. And there's ongoing work that we're doing to ensure that the Economic Partnership Agreement are aligned and support the overall agenda of the economic integration of SADC. I'm quite certain that you're aware of the difficulties that we experienced last time around following the Africa EU summit in Lisbon, that most of the SADC countries had to sign the EPAM. And that upon reflection, we've realized that some of the elements of the EPAM could undermine the overall regional economic integration agenda. And we are engaged in ongoing discussions with the EU as well as with the specific countries, particularly the SACU countries, to ensure that we manage some of the contradictions that are emerging or that arise as a result of the economic partnership. Madam Chair, you are aware that we are currently fulfilling a SADC mandate around facilitating dialogue between the major political parties in Zimbabwe with the view to ensuring that there's peace, there's stability in that country. You are aware that the people of Zimbabwe have the access to election on the 29th of March this year, the outcome of which we're all aware. And that as a result of that outcome, there will be a runoff election on the 27th of this month. You are aware that we'll be deploying, we'll be sending a team of observers, which will also be constituted by members of parliament. And this team of observers will have as their mandate the monitoring of the elections in Zimbabwe and also assisting to ensure that those elections take place in an environment of peace. And that indeed the outcome is a reflection of the will of the people of Zimbabwe. You are aware that the President has deployed a team of generals to go and make an investigation on the allegations of violence following the March election, and that these generals will be reporting again on their observations. But that indeed the elections are going ahead, both the RPF and the NPC, particularly Modern Tsvangirai. Who is the second presidential candidate, the other presidential candidate for Zimbabwe, they confirmed that they participated in the election and that the campaign has indeed begun in earnest with both MPC and ZANU-PF having launched their election campaign for the runoff. Madam Chairperson, moving on to South-South relations. Our work in this area will focus on the strengthening of engagement with the G77 plus China, with the non-aligned movement, indeed with IPSA, with Asia in general, within the framework of the NAP. the new Africa-Asia strategic partnership with China, within the framework of FOCAC, and indeed with the South American countries within the framework of the Africa, South America Forum, which was launched in Abuja last year. And also within the IOR, CIAC, the Indian Ocean Stream Organization. So we'll continue with our work in promoting solidarity and cooperation with the countries of the South. You are aware that this year we participated in the first Africa-India Forum, which was hosted in New Delhi by the government of India, where a number of other African heads of state and government participated. This was a successful meeting which launched the cooperation and partnership between Africa and India. You are aware that India is one of the emerging economies after China. It's one of the economies that are experiencing exponential growth and emerging as a big market after India, I mean after China. And as a result of that, we thought it prudent that we should engage with India. That partnership with India holds the prospect for assisting African countries to deal with some of their development challenges. With regards to IPSA, we'll continue with our work, as I've mentioned, on North-South cooperation. We are aware that the G8 will hold its summit in Japan this year. We've just come back from a successful meeting of the TICAD, the cooperation between Africa and Japan, that President Begi attended last week. Which once more the need for intensified cooperation between Japan and Africa, and where Japan committed itself first to supporting Africa's development agenda. With regards to the global system of governance, be aware that our mandate as a non-permanent member of the Security Council ends this year. We've done quite a lot of work within the Security Council to place Africa's security issues on the agenda of the Council. We continue to advance our engagement in other areas of UN, particularly the new issues of climate change and so on. Indeed, we build on the achievements that we've made in 2007, including leading on African and other thematic issues, such as Sudan, the DRC. We continue to promote cooperation between the UNFC and the African Union Peace and Security Council. The revitalization of the debate on Chapter 7 institutions in particular, focus on women in peace and security, issue of small and large arms, promotion of African perspective on the UN and the Security Council, and indeed continued leadership with regard to the issue of Timor-Leste. Continuing with our participation in the global system of governance, particular focus will also be to further advance the theme of enhancing cooperation between the UN and regional organizations, in particular the AU, as I've mentioned. We'll also continue to advocate for more transparent and democratic working methods and procedures in the Security Council. We are also continuously conscious of the setbacks experienced in the first year, particularly some of the negative publicity around issues of Myanmar, Iran, and so on. In this regard, we have developed a communication strategy to address these challenges, which is both proactive and reactive. Indeed, this year, the major issues in Kosovo, you know, Kosovo, to some extent, it has come and gone because they've declared the unilateral declared independence earlier in the year. Currently, we're hosting the Directorate on Counterterrorism. They are here in South Africa to discuss with us a wide range of issues, which we think will help also in strengthening our capacity to withstand threats posed by terrorism. The issues of Iran, Middle East, Lebanon, Syria will continue to dominate the Security Council's agenda. And the issues of the DRC, Sudan, and Western Sahara will also dominate this agenda. We continue our work around the disarmament and proliferation and arms control through our active involvement in disarmament, non-proliferation and arms control in relation to weapons of mass destruction and conventional weapons. We continue to engage in the International Atomic Energy Agency Organization and the Security Council to deal with the number of concerns, including the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, North Korea. We continue to promote principled positions on the inalienable rights of all states to pursue and advance technology for peaceful purposes. The need to preserve the credibility of relevant multilateral institutions, in particular the IAEA, as well as the Security Council. Indeed, the pursuance of peaceful negotiated solutions to address the security concerns. On the Middle East, South Africa, our profile increased over the last year following our hosting of the UN Africa meeting on Palestine. Our participation in the Annapolis process and indeed the French invitation to participate in the donors conference that was focusing on aid for Palestine. In the coming period, we'll remain involved in capacity and institution building in Palestine on a bilateral basis, as well as through IPSA and NAP. Our position is that the Palestinian unity is a prerequisite for progress in resolving the Arab-Israeli conflict. And in this regard, we will continue to engage both Hamas and Fatah based on the principles of the peace process that our president has been leading. We continue to maintain pressure for the Annapolis process, follow-up conference, to take place and for Israel and Syria negotiations to deal with some of the outstanding issues, such as the Golan Heights in Syria. So. Madam Chair, we'll continue our work also to strengthen bilateral political and economic relations with a view to ensuring that these relations contribute to the development and prosperity of our country and the countries with which we engage. in this regard, the key challenge will be to leverage our extensive global diplomatic reach and international political standing to advance our economic interests. Much of our work in this regard will be focused on the promotion of economic diplomacy. We've developed a mechanism to coordinate our work, our international work, because we've noted that there's been a great deal of duplication, overlap, in the manner in which we conduct international work. And as a result of that, we've now agreed to develop a mechanism for the coordination of our work. At the behest of the cabinet, we've produced a document that will guide our international engagement to ensure that there's greater cohesion in the manner in which we conduct our work. We've also developed a marketing strategy framework, which amongst other things includes the projection of South Africa abroad. Indeed, as you are aware, China has been identified as the first place for countrywide coordination of our international work. Madam Chairperson, you are aware that we've begun with the process of celebrating 10 years of diplomatic relations with China. That China will be hosting this Expo, World Expo, in Shanghai in 2010. And South Africa has secured a stand at the Expo, which we'll use to promote and to display our wares. And we think this will be a platform for us to reach out to the world to promote our country. This event will take place at the same time as the 2010 World Cup here in South Africa. So it will really present real opportunities for us to market and to promote our country. Madam Chairperson, just to conclude on the political side of our work, we are aware that we've increased our representation in the world, and more specifically in Africa. By the end of the year, we will have 46 diplomatic missions in 43 countries in Africa. We'll be opening new missions in Juba, in the south of Sudan, in the form of the consulate, and also in Monrovia, in Liberia, in the form of the full-fledged diplomatic mission. And once we open these, we'll be having 646 missions in total in Africa. In Asia, we've got 18 missions in 14 countries. In the Middle East, we've got 12 missions in 10 countries. In Europe, we've got 26 missions in 22 countries. And in the Americas, we've got 7 missions. So this completes the picture insofar as the major strategic thrust, major foreign policy thrust of our work. I would now like to turn your attention to the resource allocation.
Thank you.
in order to do all this work that I've just elaborated on, we've made an assessment of our resources, and we've accordingly decided to align our resources as follows. Firstly, if you look at the slide number 24, it gives you an indication of the pattern of expenditure, budget, actual expenditure, the variance and the percentage spent. And what you'll note is that over the last 3 years, our spending pattern has improved quite considerably. 2005-2006, we were 98% spent. 2006-2007, 97% spent. And the projected expenditure, 2007-2008, is 98%. So you can see that there's a pattern that suggests that we spend it, the money that you approve, and that we're spending this money on the projects that you approve. Slide 25 deals with the 2008 MTS budget allocation. The approved budget allocation is as follows. For the current year, it's 4.3 billion. For 2009-2010, it's 5.1 billion. And for the last year of the MTS, it's 4.9, almost 5 billion. So for this year, we've made the following request. In keeping with the objective of increasing and deepening our diplomatic reach, we've asked for money for increased capacity in missions in Africa and Asia. We've asked for money to supplement the foreign service utilization for our officials who are based abroad. We've asked for money for the strengthening of the department. And indeed, we've asked for money for the sharing of SADC, which I've mentioned. We've also asked for money for the diaspora, which will also be hosting. And indeed, there's also consideration of the impact of inflation. If you look at the overview for the period 2008 to 2009, we've got the African Renaissance Fund. We've made a request there. We've also made a request for infrastructure development in our mission in Washington. With regards to human resources, the human resources request was made a request for compensation of employees, goods and services. Was made resources for, I mean, request for our diplomatic academy, which is formerly the FSI, now called the Diplomatic Academy. As you know, we've repositioned and we're rebranding the institute. My colleague, Mottom, is here. She will speak to that if you want more details on it. We're rebranding and reprofiling and repositioning the Diplomatic Academy. And also, there's an envelope for corporate services. Then we also give you a sense of the schedule of proposed budget for 2008-2009 for the rest of the components. Slide 29 and 31, 32. That gives you that sense. So I won't go into that detail with your agree, Madam Chair. And I'll move on to 535. Just to say that 2008 MTF allocation, the non-granting of the present amount by National Treasury will impact on our to achieve our priority objective of strengthening and expanding our economy in Asia and in Africa. These are some of the constraints with regards to our goals and our objectives going forward. Furthermore, we've requested 100 million because we experienced significant expansion specifically between 94 and 2001. Cabinet has approved in 2001 an organizational structure that was reflecting capacity needs of the department. We've carefully analyzed our baseline and we've realized that given the ongoing feeling of rating, the operational budget is not adequate to support the current establishment. With regard to property and facility management, you know that we operate in the whole world almost. Operate here, we operate 105 countries, running 121 diplomatic missions. So we've got a huge property management team portfolio to take care of. The geographic spread and inherent complexity places high demands on the department to provide accommodation, facilities, goods and services to enable them to function optimally. In order to deal with these issues, we've created two new chief directorates, one that deals with property and facility management, which is supposed to manage our property portfolio, and another one that deals with supply chain management. Madam Chair, you are aware that work is underway for the construction of a new head of the Department of Foreign Affairs. We've obtained approval to construct the new head office under a private-public partnership. And indeed, work is progressing very well on that front. We hope to take occupancy of the facility in less than a year from now. I believe, I understand that we are on course, that indeed we will be housed in this new facility within the next year. Madam Chair, I won't bore you with the details pertaining to that unless it's a specific question that you want to raise. In the interest of time, I will move on to slide number 43 around the information communication technology plan. And just to say that our focus will really be to implement the voice over internet protocol, Windows 2003 advanced server, and also the business process management. You are aware that ICT play a very critical role in our work because half of the department is abroad. So it's very important that we have to have an effective tool of communication. So we're placing a very high premium and high importance on this issue to ensure dynamic, ongoing, effective and reliable communication between head office and our mission. We continue to provide consular services we'll be launching and rolling out the consular management system to our mission. We'll be launching a register of South African citizens abroad, so that we know where all South Africans who are abroad are, their profiles, and so on. So that in the unfortunate event of these South Africans being affected by unforeseen circumstances, we're able to provide necessary consular services consistent with the Vienna Convention. Madam Chair, we continue to ensure that the environment that we work on is secure, that we comply with the cabinet-approved security standards, the minimum information security standards. We will be rolling out the security awareness program for all our officials in this regard. You know that we operate in an environment where information is readily available and accessible, but it's critical to certain information that is vital and that is essential for our state is secured in accordance with the system of the minimum information security standards. Around organizational issues, Foreign Affairs is a growing organization. We've repositioned our human resource division, as well as our research and analysis and training division, with repositioned, with upgraded and repositioned the with a new branch now that's called human resource management. Which is at the level of the ACTG, and Ms. Mambozolo is here, the ACTG, in charge of that branch. And we have another new branch that is in charge of our diplomatic academy and the research unit, policy research unit. And Ms. Montelomo is the acting ACTG. Madam Chairperson, just to illustrate the extent to which our work has increased, we think that our numbers will be increasing plus minus 5,200 employees, including locally recruited personnel. So we need to increase the scope for training and development. And in order to meet these challenges, the branch, former branch, human capital management, was created. The next slide, slide 48, gives you an indication of the division of responsibilities and roles between the human resources division branch and the branch that uses the diplomatic academy. With regards to organizational establishment, our establishment is at 31 December 2007, both head office and mission do as follows. We had a total of 2,644 positions, and of those, 2,200 were filled, and 528 were vacant. Steps have been taken to fill the funded vacancies from the beginning of the year. We've advertised 361 positions, and we've filled 438. And that's an indication of the split between between external appointments and internal promotions. I must add that the number of internal promotions has increased over the years, and this has contributed to a very good morale in the organization. With regard to representativity, employment equity, you'll note that the top management, 60% of the colleagues in that area, African, 30% Indian, 10% color. The senior management as a whole, SMS from director upward, you'll note that the percentage is 41% for African, 4% color, 6% Indian, 15% white, and in terms of the gender balance, 24% African female, 7% white female, and the rest 1% each colored and Indian. I will not elaborate on the rest of the, of those figures. You can look at them. We can discuss the details around that. Mr. Mbodolo is also here to give you some of the questions that you may have on that. But I think the key point that we want to highlight is that we were making progress, steady progress with regard to issue of representativity, ensuring that the race and gender profile of the department is reflective of the demographics of our country, but also is consistent with the provisions of the equity legislation that this August House has passed over the years since 1994. I will move on to the issues, some of the specific issues that we've been dealing with, for example, talent management, slide 53. That will be developing and implementing a capacity building program that will ensure flexible organizational arrangements where we have specialized units focusing on specific issues. That is part of our retention strategy. We're also going to have a succession plan for our officials, developing strategic language development plan, focusing particularly on some of the languages, like Mandarin, Japanese, and so on. Very critical that we develop this, but given the important role that countries like China and Japan are increasingly playing in global affairs, and particularly in African affairs. So we have to have that capacity. We'll be implementing the career management framework and establishing a web-based career center. We'll also be designing and implementing career paths for the first 5 years in the CSA, which includes the entry cadres, the cadets, as well as and line function new entrants. And indeed, we'll continue to brand CSA as an employer of choice. You know that CSA was nominated as one of the employers of choice. It was grouped among some of the best well-managed corporate in South Africa. Mato, I think it can help us. Indeed, we continue to focus on the health and wellness of our employees. We've got a facility that we've created to ensure that we have healthy staff, a happy staff, and a staff that can feel at home. home at Foreign Affairs, with the knowledge that we have the capacity to deal or to assist them to deal with an assortment of problems that they face, which impact on their productivity and their work. So we created a facility in that regard that deals with a wide range of issues. With regards to issues of training and research, we have established within the new branch two chief directorates. One that deals with the diplomatic academy and the other that deals with the research unit. We're in the process of reconstituting these into a single branch. And indeed, the proposed new name is that of the diplomatic academy. The new branch will mainly focus on training and developing employees of the PSA so that they can contribute to the implementation of our program, and they will also conduct research and analysis on a wide range of issues that confront us in the real foreign policy. With regard to internal audit, our work is supported by a very strong team, a very strong system in the department. We've developed a risk profile of the department and a risk assessment strategy. And we've got a very committed and supportive audit committee that is constituted by very distinguished members of our community with a very intangible practice. And they constantly point out to us some of the issues that require attention in the community. In conclusion, Madam Chair, in accordance with our government's intention of providing services to our people, but we feel we've developed a service delivery improvement plan for 2008-2009, which we believe will ensure that Foreign Affairs continues to provide services to its clients. Madam Chair, as indicated, I've just outlined and highlighted some of the issues that we thought that would be of interest. But if there are other issues that members would want to deal with in terms of collaborating on, please be free to raise the issues to the end. To the best of our ability, we will try to respond to them.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kankosi, for the informative presentation. Though I must really say, full of acronyms. If you are not there next to me, and I go through this presentation alone, I won't know most. So, in the future, please, if you can assist us by providing you. Members, if you listen to the presentation of the Department of Foreign Affairs, our team now, Honorable Douglas, Honorable Mulutu, Honorable Mjembe, Honorable Chen.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just on page 15, where you say participation in the global system of governance, you say one of the key substance issues in 2008, when you speak about Iran, Middle East, and Lebanon, and Syria, is it possible for us to get a document that outlines your policy direction in terms of these particular countries? Outlines what the processes are and where you see South Africa going in terms of support to these countries, and what you actually mean by it being a key substance, issue of substance for 2008 and how that actually translates into action in terms of your different definitions and resource allocation. Then on page 19 we say China has been identified as a first test case for countrywide coordination of SA's international work. I would also like to see what that actually means. Does that mean that we are rolling out a mass trade agreement? Does it mean that we are rolling out support or resources? It's very vague in terms of what it actually means, because obviously China is a huge country and we're rolling out any kind of support. I'd like to know what that, how to quantify that, if possible. And then you say that the 2010 Shanghai World Expo, will you be working closely with the economic affairs and tourism in terms of promoting our tourism industry, specifically at this as well, because that's one of our biggest industries. Although if you've got other products that you're going to be doing, can you give some feedback on that? That's fine for me.
The person I just want to find out because the Department of State has here that today they spend 98%. My question is, why not 100%? And then the next question will be, if these agreements of, actually the memorandum of understanding that are signed by our government and the other countries, for example, on business issues and so on. This, how does this actually relate? The information flows to, how does the information actually flow to the provinces and also to the municipalities? Because it seems that this thing actually is creating problems at the local level, whereby you find that our people actually, they don't understand what actually this department is all about. Yeah, let me say.
My question also on the issue with Honorable Douglas mentioned about it. It seems to me we now have a very good relationship with China. And I just want to bring up this attention to the department. Obviously, we know that China recently had this earthquake, and which is the disaster happened. And I heard about a story which is saying, the earthquake happened on the 12th, but our condolence later only go out on the 20th. So I personally get to feel, there's a good relationship to keep in between. It's especially important is when the disasters happen, if we can act, more promptly on that. So, and then again, also on this issue, on the 2008, we had this celebration of the 10 years of SA and China's diplomatic relations. Also, again, I heard some story which is some complaint, which is saying, although we have all this arrangement for all this celebration activities, which we're looking forward to be happen, but sometimes our other department from the government doesn't really have a clear idea what this whole activity is going to happen on. So, I heard some of China side, they went out of the effort and they make a lot of arrangement, but at the very last minute, which has been cancer. And I just feel like I need to raise up this issue to bring up the awareness and we can improve data. The thing is, our Foreign Affairs Department, which we try to establish a relationship with all the different countries in the very hard work, but obviously we need to have the support from all the other departments. And same thing applies to like DTI, if they can have a proper liaison with the Foreign Affairs. My question to the department is, obviously, from our department, we have our economic counselor,
has all the permission, but the DPI also has the representative over there. So how we divide the responsibility and the mission? Some, maybe the department can give me some of a guideline on that. And then obviously, again, another, recently due to this earthquake disaster, we also give some donation to the China government. I'm just curious to know, I mean, for some disaster fund like this, where do we pay out, you know, from our department budget? The last one is, recently, I think you noticed Ignophobia, this accident that happened and it's been all over our country. What is other foreign countries of their response in the civil foreign affairs? And then how will we react on it? Thank you.
Thank you.
At times it's a question indeed. The entire presentation to me is an eye-opener as why the South Africa, my country, is having this unmeasurable profile internationally. It shows that there's a lot of work that is being done by this department and that you don't know of indeed. We appreciate that. Having said so, I thought you were going to at least to factor on the arrangement of provinces as the Honorable Mgungute, I wish I called it correctly. If there's a mistake there, I won't do it next time. Because it came out sometime, so it's a month ago, out of the newspaper, that this department has apparently a concern about the visits of provinces and municipalities when they are going, so they are visiting ahead, what's called abroad. And as such, they create a confusion by giving some confusing messages or when they are promoting their what's called their tourism, whatever it is. But indeed, we know that there are cultural activities, these cross cultural activities that has to happen. Something must happen, and we know very well that they regularly visit these what's called abroad and all that, like we do. So I thought we were going to tell us we need that information. Again, I am also impressed to learn that there is this arrangement on the establishment of an HQ to facilitate the Triple P. Now, I just want to check there. What is the involvement of the DTI in that situation? Because I was under the impression that could rather be within the jurisdiction of the IDT, DTI. I think the chairperson will agree with me that we are, as of now, busy with the Consumer Protection Bill, which, with my understanding, the situation of this, the establishment of this institution or of this regime, probably, this regime will not be immune from that Consumer Protection, what's called a bill or act. I have no doubt it can be immune. Now, yes. Furthermore, I am also impressed to learn that you are busy trying to tighten up your consular services, because a person on the street, as my and myself included, because we know that we are from this past background, where we never knew how to fly overseas. Whenever there are these incidents overseas, you ask yourself, whoa, are they geared up in terms of the data as to know who is there and all that? The trend, whenever there's something in China, I wonder where's China now? Because he has relatives over in those countries. But I'm impressed with this. We're happy to know these things, because indeed, our children have now to benefit out of this democracy. We can see it. There are no good. I have inducted my grandchildren, Mamkunu, that look, I want to break this culture of my home, of you to think that you are confined to marry within South Africa. I said, no, you must be globally. We have to think globally now. So that means I have already. I'm breaking this barrier, this Chinese wall. So all of this talks to that with me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, I've listened on we're gonna now have a register in relation to our citizens in the foreign countries, because I also want to know in relation to that, if our foreign citizens have problems there, like you are in a tight corner where your visa is expired and you have a problem there, and this South African citizen has this problem of lack of finance, can South Africa, our foreign department of foreign affairs, can that person be financially assisted? Because I have a complaint right now, that's why I'm posting this question. And then also, Honorable Chairperson, on the employees list, we very much would like to know how many differently abled people in a number can be presented to us. And if the people that are going to observe our people in Zim, and in relation to Zimbabwe, and in relation to foreign affairs, we're going to observe there. And we have to be prepared for any outcome, because people all over the world, human beings, we are very unpredictable. So we cannot really predict what outcomes they are going to be. Have we got a plan in place, because the country is independent and sovereign, referring to Zimbabwe. Is there really anything that somebody can help in from the side of foreign affairs to really assist or to try and direct issues? The language training, like the acting DG said, that like in China and those places where we're going to have business relations, economic relations, do we consider about the youth that needs to learn the foreign languages for the future, who's going to follow us up? Are we starting with them now in relation to Department of Education? Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. It's on the issue of employee health and wellness. I take it that this could start earlier, perhaps in schools. One looks at the provinces, the life expectancy is given by one of the researchers, which means that generally the life expectancy is getting lower in South Africa, because the highest density is the Western Cape with 60.3 and KZN with 43.3. Is it possible to get your flyers to schools showing that this come from Foreign Affairs, that children have got to conduct a disciplined life towards health and wellness? Because without that, we'll send people abroad only to find that we're sending people who are already ill, and it'll take about 5 years and then be called back if at all they are already ill. Yet if we start early to educate our children in schools to discipline themselves in their lifestyle, it will help us a lot. You know, training a person to go overseas is quite a massive task with all the languages that he or she has to learn. So the earlier we start training the children, it will help. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Chairperson and honorable members. I have noted 19 questions or comments. Now we're going to deal with these as a team. I'm going to ask my colleagues to respond to questions within their areas of responsibility. And then I will come back and deal with these. Also within my own responsibility. And I'll ask Mr. Mosley, Nombozolo, and Domo in that order to respond to the question.
Thanks for the word, sir. I noted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 questions which I have to respond to. Honorable member, with regard to the 98% spending, that was a projection when we did the presentation, but in fact our actual spending is 99%. We tabled our financial statements on Friday. The 1% relates to capital projects that we had planned, and because of certain issues with the contractors, we weren't able to complete them in the last financial year. So we've asked the Treasury to complete them in this financial year. And also part of it relates to international transfers, especially the African Union, where we had a compulsory budget and a voluntary budget. So the savings that relate to part of the voluntary budget that was not required. But our actual true spending is 99% at the moment. Honourable member, with regard to the PPP for the head office building and the involvement of DTI, indeed DTI had built their own building via a PPP agreement, and we took the lessons learned from this. However, I think members would know that the National Treasury has a fully fledged PPP unit within the Treasury itself. So everything that we've done with regard to the PPP for our head office building has been done in conjunction with National Treasury, because we can't even go ahead with the project without the full involvement of Treasury. So we have indeed worked with Treasury completely. In terms of the data to know who is there in terms of disasters, members will know that we have two systems now. One is the visa regime that we use in South Africa, so we're able to trace our nationals abroad through the visa system. And the other is, of course, the registration of South Africans abroad, which we've just launched. We're encouraging our citizens who go abroad to register on the system so that we can keep track of their movements and so forth. And it will assist us greatly if citizens register. We are embarking on a very comprehensive communication strategy to deal with that. Madam Chair, I wonder if you should wait.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm here.
Oh, okay, right. You know, Honorable Member raised the issues on the numerous issues by National Treasury on their office project, how we're dealing with the funding. Yes, in fact, there was a number of issues, and they were very technical in nature. So we, of course, engaged National Treasury quite heavily.
Why don't you wait for it?
Okay. And, yes, with regard to... with the registration of with regard to the registration of South Africans abroad, and when they experience certain difficulties. As far as visas and citizenship things are concerned, of course our missions are there to assist them all the way. In every one of our missions abroad, there is either home affairs attaché that deals that will be there to assist them. Alternately, if there's no home affairs official president, then our own officials will assist them. At this stage, the financial arrangement or financial assistance that we grant are only those prisoners who are incarcerated in countries abroad. And there's a cabinet memo on that in terms of the stipend that we give and things like that. That's the only financial assistance that we have approval for in terms at this stage in time. Even if a person deceased, you know, dies overseas and we have to bring the mortal remains, there is an element of the family involvement as well there. I think, because unless you want to deal with the disaster fund for the China, you'll deal with it. Okay. Now, just to say, ma'am, that disaster fund, any type of disaster fund, is actually a presidential decree. Normally the president would raise the matter of a disaster fund, and then, of course, all departments would consider the So I'm not aware of the president raising that, but I do know that there was a fund set up by NGOs and so forth, especially the Gifts of Givers Foundation and so forth, and quite a bit of aid has already gone thrown through to China with regard to that avenue as well. Thank you very much. Oh, no, Madam Chairperson, we waited for you to come to respond to the matters you raised on the new head office project. The issue raised by the Treasury on the head office project was largely technical in nature. Some of them related to, you see, there's a requirement for a significant portion of BEE involvement in our head office project. So there was a funding matter that the Treasury raised, and then there was also an insurance matter. So they're largely technical. We have engaged with Treasury and with the Rand Merchant Bank, who is the financial backer here, quite extensively. Those matters have now been resolved, and we are in the final stages of signing the PPP agreement. As far as the funding is concerned, our challenges last year, until the end of the financial year, was with regard to the early works contract. We have engaged with National Treasury, we've engaged with the Public Finance Unit in there, and they've essentially funded our early works contract. What had happened was we had to use some of our monies from our budget and for rollovers for this year. And that essentially also impacts on the 99% spending that we've had. But essentially, we've managed to resolve the funding matters with the National Treasury as well. This for information purpose for the members, is that the building, the basement is complete. We're now with the superstructure. We, as Mr. Kosi mentioned, we're on track for completion in March next year. And as I said, we're in the final stages of the CCP agreement, which will be a 25-year arrangement with the private sector. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I am responding to two questions. The first one is around the number of people with disabilities within the department, and the second question was around employee health and wellness, particularly for young people. That's to the number of people with disabilities. That is on page 51, where we have indicated the numbers. And we have given a breakdown at the bottom, the very bottom blocks of disability. As you can see, in total we have 33 people with disabilities in the department. And we've given you the breakdown according to race and gender, and then the percentages. Overall, we are sitting at around 1.4%, 1.49% of people with disability. The law or DPSA target for government is 2%, which we must reach by, I think it's June 2009, we must have reached the target of 2%. We have introduced measures within the department to see how we can expedite reaching that target. We use organizations, when we do our recruitment and selection, we specifically target organizations that deal with people with disability to try and get applications from them. So that this is, and we also have an in-house forum for people with disability who are also advising the department. They're in the department, but also advising the department in terms of how to deal with such matters. Okay. On the issue of health and wellness, particularly for young people, what we have control on and what we can do and try and expand more is for our own employees, but not only our own employees, but their families as well. So when we talk families, we are also talking young people. And indeed, we have started doing that work about 2 years ago, where we focused on children of our employees, which is young people in particular. We partnered with the UNDP to bring life skills education to children of our own employees. And we had quite a good response. We've had it now for 2 years, where the young people can come in, and we've got different topics where we focus on HIV AIDS being one of them, and other health and wellness issues that we then engage the young kids in, and indeed trying to be preventative for the future and for them to take responsibility for their own health and wellness. Now, I would imagine that in this day and age, the Department of Education is having education around life skills, it's called life skills, for young people in different schools. I can't say it with absolute surety because I'm not within that department, but those of us who are parents will know that I have been given a program on life skills in the different schools. So, yes, the Department of Education really is focusing on that. But as far as Foreign Affairs, the extent that we can go is to go into the families of our own employees, their children. But we are beginning to see how, exploring how can we get more involved in community. And probably this is one avenue that we can pursue and say, okay, our involvement in that community, maybe in Atrichville or whatever, let's look at EWC running a workshop for, as opposed to employees, children of our own employees, but in that particular community. I think it's something that we can explore because we're looking at ways of our department getting more involved in community. Thanks. I think that, yes, indeed you are correct. Sending people overseas, and then within no time they come back because they are ill, we have picked it up as a challenge for the department. As a result, we are introducing a new way of posting where we assess them before they go, and not to exclude them from going, that is important, but to say, what's your state of health and wellness? Because when we know about your state of health and wellness, we assist you to manage it, and also we'll be mindful of where we send you. When we know that you're on this medication and that medication, we can't send you to, for example, a country which has got malaria, where you have to take tablets around malaria, which can have a contra
indication, yes,
on the other medication. So we are going to, in fact, we're going to go on tender to look for doctors that are familiar with this kind of work, and that's what we're going to introduce in the department, to make sure that people that are going are looked at holistically from a health perspective, health and wellness perspective, both physical health and emotional health.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. With regard to whether we encourage young people to do foreign languages, we reach out to them in different ways. One is that HR is involved in Expo in partnership with SAPC and other universities, where they reach out to provinces and meet with young people at the high school level and talk about what are the qualities and the qualifications which a diplomat needs. And foreign languages is one of the things they talk about to the young people. The second one is that we also reach out, we have learnerships on different areas within the department where we recruit young people who are unemployed, and then they will get into a learnership. Although it's not in foreign languages, they get to learn in the department about all the different aspects, including foreign languages. But specifically, in terms of investing in young people, we've got the cadet program. the career program is where we reach out to young people, graduates, and we employ them on a contract for a year. During that year, we train them, and for them, the French language is compulsory, and they have to do about 280 hours for the whole year, and they do pass that. So we do dedicate the time and the resources towards that because they are already within the department. And of course, if at the end of the year and the program, that we assess them academically in attitude and also on how they understand the foreign language. What we've realized during this recruitment of young people is that universities and some of the schools within the country have really started teaching foreign languages. And some of the youngsters who come to the department already have some background on foreign languages. One of the things we've learned, though, is that when we need people who are professionals in interpreting, interpretation and translation, which is a specific skill at a higher level, they're very, very scarce globally. And we struggle to get those people. And one of the strategies which the department is looking at is to really start looking from school level up, because you have to have the language from earlier on in order for you to get to that level 10 years later. So it's one of the things we're looking at. And what we did as a first approach to it is that we approached the different embassies, like the French embassy, which gives bursaries to South Africans to do French at a high level. And we try to negotiate with them on whether they can put in the contract when they give the bursaries a paragraph which says, when you come back, at least come and work for the government for a year. And they said, no, it's not possible unless you can be able to contribute something. So we are in negotiations and looking at different strategies on how we can address the matter. Thank you, Chairman.
Thanks very much, colleagues, and thanks, Chairperson. Well, Madam Chair, we've taken note of your proposal that we should include a glossary for the acronym that we have in our presentation, and we'll do that for future presentations, so it's to ensure that members follow and understand some of the acronyms. Honorable Douglas, I just stepped out of the room. I wanted to respond to some of these questions. I'm not sure if I should. Well, he asked a question around Iran, Middle East, and Syria, whether it's possible to provide a policy document on this. Indeed, it's impossible. We can share that document without any problem. But just to say that these are very important questions in the context of global peace and security. Generally, but more specifically in the context of the Middle East. Our policy on Iran is quite clear, particularly around its nuclear enrichment program, that will support any nuclear enrichment program to the extent that it is for peaceful purposes. But that definitely we do not support any nuclear enrichment program that is for purposes other than stated that quite clearly, and we've also expressed that position in the manner in which we voted in the Security Council around issues of Iran. With regard to Syria, we've indicated that it's important that there should be a dead track to deal with the issues around the Golan Heights. You know that following the Yom Kippur, the war in 67, Israel occupied the southern part of Syria, in particular the Golan Heights, and that it's important that we need to have a third track that deals with that issue.
that we can have durable peace. You know, the first threat is the Palestinian-Israeli question. The second threat is obviously the Lebanese-Israeli question, and the third threat is the Syria-Israeli question. So we need to deal with all those three comprehensively so that we can have durable and sustainable peace. On the question of the Shanghai Expo, what other projects are involved? We are working closely with CPI with respect to the Shanghai Expo. As I mentioned, the Shanghai Expo provides a platform for us to promote South African products in particular and to promote South Africa as a country in general. And the CPI Department of Tourism SA are our major partners with respect to the tourism expo. So we will be displaying, we will be putting on in that expo at our store a wide range of products will be on this. Honorable Mungu to ask the question around the MOU, Memorandum of Agreement on Trade. Whether they take into consideration the provinces and municipalities, how do municipalities and provinces access this information. This information is available at DTI, where it concentrates to the DTI. So this information is available upon request, it can be provided by DTI. Generally, because this is a national competence, the conclusion of this interstate agreement rests with the Department of Trade and Industry to the extent that they affect trade. But there is nothing that stops the various provinces and municipalities from entering into cooperation agreements with corresponding provinces or regions and cities. Honorable Chen, I take note of what you have mentioned around the delays in the conveyance of our condolences to the government and people of the People's Republic of China. I will follow that up just to establish exactly what occasioned this delay. But the people of China are quite aware of our support and our sympathy, and they've expressed the fact that they welcome the solidarity that was expressed to them during this difficult time, and also the gesture of humanitarian assistance and support that was provided so that they can deal with this problem. With regard to the issue of the 10-year celebration, we have established an interdepartmental committee that is managing directly this whole program on the celebration of the 10 years of our decade of relationship with China. So there is an interdepartmental and also, might I say, intergovernmental committee that also has provincial representation from some of the municipalities that have consultations with their counterparts from China. So there is that committee, which is chaired by Ambassador Majila, the CDG in charge of Asia. On your question on how we divide the roles of economic counselors, ESA and DPI, inside the mission itself, the head of mission together with the transferred officials, they meet and they develop a business plan on an annual basis. They develop a business plan based on the strategic plan as well as the business plan of the department, the business unit under which they work. And after developing that business plan, they then allocate the roles and responsibilities of the various officials within the mission, including the CCR officials. And that is how then the roles are split among the various officials. Honorable Kolweni, thanks for the compliment that you have expressed to the department for the work that we do. I've already responded to your question around the province building, which was similar to the one that was raised by Honorable Kolweni. But just to emphasize that indeed we have established, we have proposed the creation of a mechanism for the coordination of our international work. And this mechanism is not just an interdepartmental mechanism at national level, but an intergovernmental mechanism as well, because it will include all the provinces and all the municipalities. So there is that proposal, and this is in keeping with the instruction that we got from the Lakota early this year around the coordination of our work. It's going to take a while. It's going to be a process. It's not going to be an event to eventually ensure that there is greater coordination and cohesion of our work internationally. But we've got to make it that the movement was already done.
Thank you.
On the question of Zimbabwe, whether we have a plan to assist. Indeed, we've taken the view that the first thing to do is to find a political solution to the problem. So hopefully, after 27 June, the date that has been set for the runoff, there will be a winner. Hopefully, there will be an outright winner. And hopefully, that outright winner will find it in his heart to ensure that all the parties in Zimbabwe, all the political parties in Zimbabwe, are part of whatever dispensation going forward. Because it's important that we have to have a process of healing. We don't want to impose the solution to the problem. But the 29 March election have indicated quite clearly that the country is divided between the ZANU-PF and you can't rule either away. You have to take that on board. So we hope that they will be magnanimous. Whoever wins will be magnanimous enough to throw an olive branch to whoever would have lost the election, going to move the process forward and ensure that there is a national reconciliation, a national peace process. And once that happens, then we think that the international community will have to embrace whatever outcome and whatever government that takes over in Zimbabwe after that. And as part of the international community, we will make our contribution within SADC and also bilaterally to assist Zimbabwe to emerge from this social and political
community. Just a follow-up question. To that item 51, page 51 on that disability, people with challenge. Based on our fundamental agenda of transformation, I am compelled to ask this question. Because we don't have a breakdown. If you had a breakdown based on levels of status, I wouldn't be having this question. When you look at African versus white numbers, is it by virtue of what you have inherited there, or is it a deliberation? What happens?
Okay. Mine is on slide number 13. Focus on women in peace and security. You know, usually when you find, like, in these other countries, the situation is not in a very good state. One worries what's happening with women and children. So I would like to actually get the understanding of what do you really do when you focus on women and peace and security. What assistance do you do? Especially as a person serving in the Joint Monitoring Committee on the Status of Women. The other thing I forgot to ask, Ms. Ngosi, I'm not sure whether the Department of Foreign Affairs has got the gender focal point. And if you do have the gender focal point, at what level, and is the unit what you call fully fleshed?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Still focusing on the youth, does the department assist with the student exchange program? Because one may want to send, say, children to other countries, because one learns the language better when within the community. Does the department assist in that thing?
Thank you. Starting with the question of the disability, indeed, the numbers may look or do look quite skewed if one were to, within the context of transformation. Fact of the matter is that, yes, the number that you see there of white colleagues is largely, if not all of them, colleagues that have been in the department for a long time. And in fact, where we focused on the age that you see, the majority of that are people that have joined the department in the last, probably I'll say since 2004. So because there has been a really concerted effort to recruit people with disabilities. And just generally, when you look at our recruitment numbers from one year to the other, from outside, the focus has been on changing the profile and trying to balance representativity. Then on the gender focal point, yes, we do have a fully fledged gender focal point. It used to be headed at a director level, and then we changed that in 2006. And make sure that it gets represented at a chief director level. So we do have chief director for gender focal point, focusing within the department, but also in on issues of international relations and women in particular. So she, Ms.
through the NAF does with other, for instance, the multilateral colleagues around issues that impact on women, so it's a fully expressed gender for California. And we
just follow up there. Do you have a policy, gender policy?
Yes, we do. We do have a gender policy. Okay. Then on the youth exchange with other countries, I would imagine that you were referring to other countries.
Yes.
We do not have youth from the communities as opposed to our own people.
Yes, from the communities.
From the communities.
Yes.
No, we don't have one from the communities, where we send people from the community to other countries. But we do have one with our own employees, young people, that we do send to different countries. Sometimes it's to acquire a foreign language. Sometimes it's to it'll depend on what the issues are at that particular time. But we do, and we target youth that are really performing well within the department, that are promising as a way of incentivizing and retaining the young people. As far as focusing on youth from outside, it's something that we haven't looked at yet. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a follow-up question. Still there. If you say maybe we are too specific by saying from the communities, are you saying to me neither provinces have these programs, province to province?
That then it will be a different focus, because there are training agreements that different provinces will have with different countries. So you'll find that the city of New York will have a twinning agreement with another city in South Africa. And within those twinning agreements, you'll find that there's a range of issues that they agree upon. It might be, I remember when Rudy Giuliani, with regard to Gauteng province, where the focus was on policing, that's the one that I'm aware of. But within that training agreement, there could have been other issues. There could have been issues around education or youth program, youth development. There could have been, but we would not be, and Ms. Nkosi can comment on that to say, the content of the different training agreements, to what extent is Foreign Affairs aware of those agreements and what programs. I'm sure Mr. Nkosi can comment on that. But indeed, within the training agreements, they will focus on the different needs of the different communities. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Chairman. Well, with regard to the question of women and children in conflict-ridden countries, you are aware, Chairperson, that we were in the process of revising the white paper on peace missions. In this white paper on peace missions was factored in the issue of women and children, making proposals on how we should deal with this situation. Because as you know, in most conflicts, women and children are always the most vulnerable, and they suffer seriously during periods of war. So we've factored that issue of women and children in this one, how we should deal with that situation. But also you are aware that within the AU, we were actively participating in the ministerial committee that is looking at this Minister Charles Ginsberg is our representative, and they held a meeting recently in Bujumbura to discuss this. But thirdly, we have this initiative led by the First Lady that's called the SAWIN, South African Women in Development, which is also looking at the issue of women in particular. So there are all these issues. And South Africa is either championing or playing an active role in ensuring that we keep this situation. Just to add to what Mr. Mpozolo said with respect to the twin agreements, indeed, there is a range of issues that are covered in this agreement. They're not one dimensional. They cover quite a range of things. But the implementing agent is not the national government. The implementing agent is the provincial authority or the municipality concerned. Because these are agreements that are completed by these entities of our government. So, to the extent that the municipality of Graaf Reinet, for example, has got the capacity to honor the terms of that agreement, they have to implement. They can't expect the provincial government or the national government to implement an agreement to which they've not been granted.
I think that's the last thing, Honorable Chairperson. Is it possible, perhaps through the influence of the department, to encourage countries, especially in Africa, to establish buffer zones where it can be said this area is just for women and children? When there are fights, they can be taken there. And no fighting can be done within that. Because during the Second World War, there were buffer zones where fighting, you know, was avoided. I mean, I don't know, but you could look at it. Thank you.
No, I think this is an interesting question, but I think it's a political question. Yeah, I'm not trying to answer it, but I think just to add it, if the DG or whoever will feel comfortable to attempt it, to me it's more about educating our African countries, whenever there are these military conflicts, you know. Thank you.
Well, Chairperson, is something that is worth considering. But let me just try to contextualize the issues, for instance, around your First and Second World War. You had a conventional war, and it was clear who was fighting who. Second World War, you had the Nazis, Italians, so on the one hand, and the Allies on the other hand. So it was clear the battle lines were drawn. Now, in the case of conflicts on the continent, most of these conflicts are intrastate, not interstate. They're intrastate. And it's always very difficult to determine who is who in this conflict. I mean, if you look at the issue of Darfur, it's happening right inside Sudan. There are allegations about who is involved, counter allegations and all that. It becomes very difficult. But indeed, there are conventions, there are protocols, UN conventions, AU protocols, and all that, which are in line with the sentiment that we have expressed, that the women and children in situations of war, they always need to be, you know, taken care of, protected, and they should not be part of the casualties. Of war. So that sentiment is expressed, it finds application in the various international instruments and protocols of the EU. But we'll explore the issue further. Thank you.
And the people of Mzinga can teach them. You know, in Mzinga, women were not touched at all. In as much as that men used to wear aprons and pretend to be women, then they would be safe. And then try to plow in the fields. That's an addition, thanks.
They're no more indigenous people.
Let me at this point in time thank the department, thank Mr. Nkosi for the hard work that you are doing, and your colleagues also, and looking forward to seeing you again for something else. But I think the gender focal point will invite them through your committee. Through the JMC on the 8th of May.
Alala.
We are all invited to finger
line. Where? Yeah. What was on the finger line, Jerama? The monkey one, open the. No, you don't have to finger. What's the one? Finger line, you don't have to finger line. Who can open?
Yes, I think that's perfect. Sorry, and it's okay.